welcome to the Common Geeking Program, a book club for geek culture, where each week the three of us will read up on a topic, then discuss it from our own geeky, nerdy perspectives. I'm your host, Taimul Chowdhury, or Chatter, whichever you prefer, and this week we will be discussing Kiki's Delivery Service.
Yeah, we are.
With the theme being Beauty in the Mundane.
Hi, my name is Jeff, and today I'm going to be repping Minecraft, for lack of a better option, or lack of a worse option. Lack of options, really.
Well, I think you're going to do great. I think it's a great option. Hi, I'm Laura, and today I will be representing the Great British Baking Show because it is the most beautiful of all mundane things in the universe.
Yeah, so we're going to first talk about each of our domains, and then after that we will have a discussion section where we openly discuss them in relation to the theme.
We're going
to
discuss stuff in the discussion?
Yeah, no, crazy, right? Finally, we'll close with a rating section where we determine first who contributed to the theme the best. To the discussion the best.
Not first.
Wait, what are we doing? We're starting with the ratings?
No, in the new guide, there's a line about the ratings in the intro.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Laura looks away for 1 second. The podcast is over. We're in ratings now, baby.
Let me just
I won that. Because you didn't say anything.
I'm going to just start that over. Yeah, so last thing we do is a rating section. First, we rate the topic from 1 to 5, and then I give to the person I think who contributed to the discussion the best what is effectively a gold star.
Woo!
And that is, I don't, let's just move on to the summary, motherfuckers. I didn't know how to segue. So let's talk about Kiki's Delivery Service. It is a... Sorry, I had this written down.
Oh, wait, it exists, for sure.
Oh, yeah, totally.
It's a movie.
Okay, it is an animated movie made by Studio Ghibli, directed by Hayao Miyazaki. It is considered a classic. It's Japanese. It's...
As one might expect.
Yes.
Being directed by Hayao Miyazaki.
Yes. Yes, it would be. Mm.
So Kiki's Delivery Service is, I would consider it like a coming-of-age story about a young witch whose name is Kiki, and it seems like when you turn 13 or 12 or 13 in that range, young witches go off to a new town to become the town witch and kind of learn about how being on their own and come into their powers. So Kiki goes off and finds this like beautiful, huge city on the water. Like there's a big, I think it's on the ocean, and it looks like a large city. Like I think a lot of people go to small towns.
Yeah, I don't know
this,
what
like, big city.
If the country is just supposed to be fictional, or is it like vaguely European?
It was definitely vaguely European. I don't remember the name of the city.
I don't know because I don't think the city had a name, but a lot of the characters' names were kind of Japanese, so maybe it was supposed to be in Japan.
It looked pretty European.
And I guess in this world, like witches exist, and it's just like a recognized thing, kind of obscure, but like
yeah, it's not like anyone's going what? What is that? I've never seen that.
Yeah.
It's more like a. Oh, that's what a witch looks like. Okay.
Right. Yeah. It's not a secret, but it's not common.
Yeah. Right. And the city that she goes to doesn't have a current witch, so she's the only one.
Yeah.
We hadn't had one for a while.
Which is the goal. And she also has a cat named Gigi, who's a fucking sass monster.
True.
Gigi, look, it's me!
I love him.
He's her familiar. He's pretty cute. But the story really isn't super complicated. She gets to the city and she kind of accidentally starts a delivery service because she doesn't have enough money to really stay somewhere for a long time. So she ends up staying above a bakery and is taken in by this very nice woman who gives her a job at the bakery. She's very pregnant, so she needs help around the shop.
Word.
And Kiki ends up starting to deliver both baked goods and other items because she can fly on a broomstick, so it's a lot easier for her to deliver things. So she starts this delivery service, meets like a cute boy that she doesn't like at first.
I love
she
him.
Totally reacts.
He's such a goof. I love Tombo.
Hey there, the switch. It's me. Remember Tombo?
he tries to be nice. He's like, oh, do you want to like get coffee with me and or something? She's like, you don't even know my name. So she,
well, yeah, because it starts like it starts off right where like she flies into town and everyone's like, holy shit, a witch, right? And then she's like all, you know, being like, oh, we gotta make good first impressions. So she's looking all fucking snooty on her broom, and then she almost runs into a bus because she's not used to cities, and then like almost causes this big accident. And this fucking like cop is like, yo, I'm gonna have to tell your parents because you almost caused a major accident. And then Tombo, before she meets him, yells thief, so the cop walks away and she can leave. And then he like catches up with her and he's like, yo, I was the one who said thief, so you could get away.
Hey, wait up, it worked out pretty good, huh? I meant to fool that cop. That was me back there. I mean, me yelling thief.
And he's just like, I think it's really swell that you're a fucking witch. And she's just like, you don't even know my name. Thanks yeah. for helping me, I guess, but fuck you.
Yeah, she was pretty harsh.
Yeah, I mean, part of her character is that she's kind of mood swingy, which is, you know, is normal of a 13-year-old, so...
Can confirm.
I think we can forgive her. Yeah.
So
normal teenage girl behavior.
The story of this movie, basically, it doesn't really have any kind of overarching plot so much as it follows sort of her day-to-day life. There's not really a conflict beyond her just kind of coming to terms with her own insecurities and overcoming them and stuff.
Well, there's the bit at the end with the dirigible.
Yeah, but like if you think about like movie structure and movie writing,
yeah,
it does not do that really.
I mean, I think one of the things about it though, right, is that like it's this story about her going on this witch's journey, but instead of the overarching plot being like, oh, some fucking wizarding war or like some big conflict that she's swept into, it's actually mostly about her delivery job.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, oh yeah, witches exist in this world and it's a thing, but that's not like, you know.
It's much more about her taking on responsibility and learning how to work hard and sacrifice. Like she wants to go to this party, but she's helping this woman bake a pie instead. And then she ends up not being able to go because when she starts trying to fly back,
it rains. Yeah.
It's really about her taking on.
Yeah.
Like,
there's
work, like actual real life work.
Yeah.
Right. Instead of there being like a huge conflict, there's like a bunch of smaller conflicts,
mini conflicts, yeah, like
right, because after that I think the one biggest part is that she goes and she hangs out with Tombo, and then like she sees this girl that she didn't like because she delivered a package to her and she was a snob, and then like after that she kind of leaves sort of depressed and then discovers that her powers are gone.
And also that Gigi just fucking up and ditched her just to get some pussy.
I thought that he couldn't understand her. I thought they couldn't talk anymore.
No, I think that was part of her. That was, yeah, I like that pun though.
Yeah.
Because he's a cat. Well, yeah, no, I mean, I think that the implication there is that Gigi being like humanly aware and sentient is part of her powers, because when she loses her powers, not only can she not communicate with Gigi anymore, but Gigi is acting much more like a cat than before.
Than her familiar.
Yeah, but like once she gets her powers back, he's still meowing. He's still cat-like.
No, she doesn't get her powers back till she goes and saves Tombo from the dirigible crash. And then as soon as she goes on the news, Gigi runs up to her and is like, can you hear me now?
Mm. Wait, is that a difference between dub and sub? Because I remember
maybe
the cat just meowing at the end.
Oh, maybe. Really? I watched the the dubbed version.
Yeah, in the dubbed version, he definitely at the end talk again. Yeah, I mean, he doesn't like say anything.
Right. It's not like a full conversation, but it's definitely words.
Yeah. At the end, after she saves Tombo, he runs up and he's just like, "Kiki, can you hear me?" And then he like jumps up on her shoulder and she's like,
"You know what? I might have to check that."
I mean, the main thing is that like Tombo is interested in her initially because like he's interested in aviation, and part of the big underlying thing going on is that there's this big like new dirigible in town, and at the end there's like some wind gust that complicates it and ends up like sending it soaring off into the sky, and everyone was trying to pull it down, and Tombo ends up like hanging from a rope off of it, and then she gets her powers back and saves him. And that's, yeah.
Okay, so I wanted to talk about Kiki's Delivery Service, because like a long time ago when I was a kid, I read these two books, Understanding Comics and Making Comics by Scott Scott McCloud. And in those, he briefly talks about manga, and he brings up that one of the appeals of those comics is beauty in the mundane. And since then, I've kind of had an interest in that kind of style of storytelling. It's not limited to just comics, and it's very prominent throughout the Studio Ghibli's work, and it's very there in Kiki's Delivery Service.
Yeah, I didn't really realize how little you see that in the West until I was trying to pick a domain and really couldn't come up with much.
Right, exactly. And it's kind of interesting because, like, you know, as geeks, we often seek out escapist fantasies. We want to leave this boring world behind.
Yeah.
Find something a lot more interesting. I know Pokemon does that for me, but there's something to be said about something that can find the beauty in the mundane, something that can take the ordinary and make it extraordinary. Take the things that we might glance over in our day-to-day lives and just find something meaningful in that. And Kiki's Delivery Service does that, from just like backgrounds with walls that actually are stained or chipped, from animation stuff like Kiki very often pats down her skirt like an actual person would do.
Yeah, but I mean, Miyazaki and Studio Ghibli definitely have a pretty incredible attention to detail when it comes to animation.
I feel like now is a really good time for my confession corner. Which I gave you guys a warning about, that it was coming.
Okay.
The only other Studio Ghibli film I have ever seen is My Neighbor Totoro.
For shame.
That's a good movie.
And that was when I was like 11, maybe. So
I got to tell you, I love both Kiki's Delivery Service and My Neighbor Totoro, but I think that, like, for the artistic stylings of Studio Ghibli, that there are some other ones you should definitely check out. Like, I think these two that you've now seen are a bit more, kiddie sounds wrong, but a little bit more kiddie than
a
lot of their
than
other...
Mundane-y.
Yeah, no, I mean, like...
They're more cutesy and...
Yeah, like, child-friendly.
Yeah.
Not that the other ones aren't child-friendly, but they've got a bit more oomph, narrative oomph to them.
You can split up Ghibli movies into different kinds of stuff. You know, you got the cutesy stuff like Totoro and Kiki. You got the dark stuff like Nausicaa and Spirited Away. Then you got stuff like...
I would definitely put Princess Mononoke into the cutesy category.
I just oomed and nodded.
Yeah, because you don't know.
I don't know.
No, Princess Mononoke is like the most violent-ass Studio Ghibli film. It's like the darkest one, I would say.
Yeah. They've been on my list for a really long time. I don't know why I haven't seen them yet, except that I just don't watch movies very often, unless it's specifically for the podcast, actually.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you should get on that.
They're totally on my list.
I think Castle in the Sky is my favorite.
My favorite would have to be Spirited Away. It does a lot of ballsy stuff, and it's also just the it's the first Ghibli movie I watched, so of course it's going to leave the biggest impression.
Yeah.
You're hearing it right now. Jeff Levitt's opinion, Spirited Away is overrated.
Jeff Levitt's a fucking hipster.
Ooh, shit.
Because it fucking terrified me. But then I was like, oh, I'll give this another chance. Like a few years ago, and I went back and watched it. I'm like, that's the movie that everyone thinks is the best fucking Ghibli movie? Like, no, it's just, I don't know. I just don't find it as interesting as, like, any of the other ones. That's just
Well, now I'll go in with my expectations tempered. It'll be good.
Yeah, there you go.
Fair enough. So, let's move on to the domains. Representatives, speak.
Is it me? Is it me first? Yeah, I'm Jeff. I'm going to be talking about Minecraft today. And I was like, I was kind of struggling to come up with a domain for this topic, because as I mentioned earlier, a lot of the stuff in the West kind of doesn't really have as much beauty in the mundane stuff. So really the best options I could think of were other Ghibli movies, but that seemed a little stifling. So I didn't want to do that. So, and then I was like thinking, what's something that is just like you appreciate it even though it's not really complicated, there's no like grand story, and I've been playing Minecraft all week, and then I was like, you know what, this kind of works. And for those of you who don't know, Minecraft is a computer game where it's sort of like Legos the game. Basically the entire world is just made up of blocks of varying types, like dirt and stone.
Yeah, like think like a N64 game, but like
Yeah.
Even more squarey than
Right. I mean, if they're familiar with N64 games, I'm sure they're familiar with Minecraft. I'm talking to the uninitiated, you know?
Fair enough.
And basically, there's no real plot to the game. You're just kind of in this world, and it's called Minecraft because you can mine for materials and use the materials to craft things and, like, use those things to build houses and stuff like that. But there's no one else that you really interact with if you're playing single player. And if you're playing multiplayer just in this world with anyone else. And there's like a day-night cycle, and during the nighttime monsters appear, like zombies and spiders and things. So like part of your initial, I guess, part of your initial, what's the word I'm looking for? Objective in the beginning of the game is to find the materials to, you know, make shelter and then make a bed so you can skip through the night cycle. But basically you just live in the world and kind of do whatever you want, mine for materials to find new stuff. So it's like, I thought about it for this when it's just like, you sort of just kind of live instead of it having like this grand plot, like a lot of
like most video games, there's pretty much an end game of.
Yeah, there's an objective. Yeah, there are like miniature things in Minecraft that have been added over time where you can go to complete something, but it's not like that's really the goal that you have going in.
You do it, and the game
in.
Still continues on.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I thought to rep Minecraft before I watched Kiki's Delivery Service again, but then when I was watching Kiki's Delivery Service at the beginning, when she just gets off in her broom and goes in a different direction, I was like, oh, that's kind of like what I've been doing in Minecraft. Every once in a while, I'll just decide to walk in a direction and see what new, like, biomes and stuff that I can encounter and what new exotic resources I find. And it, like, takes all these things, like, oh, yeah, cutting down trees and building a farm and building a house out of blocks that would normally be kind of, like, pretty basic in, like, in a video game scape. And it makes them the sole focus. So then the first time that there's anything like slightly out of the ordinary, it's just like, oh my god, there are ocelots in this game? That's so exciting. Recently found out there were llamas. That was cool. And it's just like, but ultimately, you know, they're just like these blocky animals that walk around. They don't really, you know, do anything overly exciting. But part of the mundaneness of the game is what makes it so therapeutic, in a sense.
Laura.
Cool. That's me. So today I will be representing the Great British Baking Show.
I went to take a drink of my water, but the glass hit my nose and the water splashed up in my face right as you started talking.
Nice. I have definitely done that before. So today I'm going to be talking about the Great British Baking Show. As we were talking a little bit about the summary and Jeff's domain, there's definitely something lacking in a lot of American culture that lacks the mundane. I think American culture is very associated with, like, there has to be some storyline and some background, and there has to be something drawing the audience through.
The mundane is boring.
Right. And one of the things that I love...
We need explosions.
Absolutely so much about the Great British Baking Show is that it is literally just people who love to bake. Like, that's the whole show.
Is it like a competition or like other cooking
yeah,
shows?
Yeah, it is a competition. So the way that the show works is there are two judges and two kind of hosts. And this is for the seasons, whatever, 1 through 4 that I watched. I hear it's changed recently. But for what I'm talking about, it's with Mary Berry. And oh my god, Paul, I think his name is
just Paul.
But these just two Paul. Hosts, like, Mary Berry is a very famous cookbook author. Like, she's much older.
Is that her real name?
Classic. Yeah, it's fucking great. And she's just this, like, little British lady who's amazing and, like, super fab. And then I have to look up his name.
Paul. Just
it
Paul.
Is Paul.
It's just Paul.
Oh.
No, I have no idea. I've never watched the British Baking Show. I'm just going off the information that you're giving me, Laura. Thought maybe in the last 2 minutes you'd forgotten that his name is definitively Paul.
So I am very confused because now this is telling me that it's called the Great British Bake Off, and I've seen it as the Great British Bake Off and the Great British Baking Show, so I'm just going to stick with the Great British Baking Show.
Laura doesn't even know what her fucking domain is called. Disqualified right now.
Paul Hollywood. Okay.
You forgot his last name is Hollywood?
Paul
I did.
Hollywood.
Can't
That's
be a real name. There's no fucking way Mary no. Berry and Paul Hollywood are their real names.
No.
Get out of here.
Google it, whatever. It's fine. So there are two hosts, Mary Berry and Paul Hollywood. Paul Hollywood is like a middle-aged guy who I guess owns some very successful bakeries in Great Britain. So he's like a figure there, not so much known in the United States except for the show. And then there are two hosts that just kind of like run the competition a little bit. They are hilarious and they just kind of whiff off each other all the time. But they also become friends with the contestants, which is really amazing. And there are 12 contestants. And then every week they have to go through three challenges. So they do one challenge that they've prepared for.
Are you fucking kidding me? That's his real name?
That's his real name, dude.
Mary Berry and Paul Hollywood.
How are these mundane?
There's nothing mundane about that. Disqualified.
Whatever.
Sorry.
So they start off with a signature challenge every week, which is something that they have been asked to make, and they basically know what's happening, and they have practiced it at home. So they come in, they just do their signature challenge. Then there's a technical challenge, where Mary Berry or Paul will choose a recipe and give them very, very stripped down directions. So if you're making like some sort of a fancy cake, it'll be like, make a cake. And that's it. That's all the directions that they give you. And they give you all the ingredients that you need to make it in front of you, but you have to figure out the proportions and what heat to cook it at and how you want to add things. So it's very much a test of your knowledge. And then the last challenge every week is the showstopper, where the judges will basically ask them to do something like absolutely crazy and everybody does something different, but it's like this huge production basically. So that's the one where like they'll make a wedding cake or they'll have to make something that, you know, is at least 3 feet tall, and they have to kind of figure out how to do that. But like there's no, it is a competition because each week someone is getting eliminated, and at the end somebody wins. But they win like a cake platter that says the Great British Bake Off or the Great British Baking Show. And there is no talk of prize money. There's no talk of like you're going to get a deal with Nokia and you're going to like get all the cooking stuff for the rest of your life and you're going to have a lifetime of free flour. Like there's none of that. And so it's really just about people, yeah, showing off their baking skills and what they love to do. And even though it's a competition, it's so focused on how just the baking goes. So you see a lot of the footage is watching the contestants like leaning down over their ovens and watching their stuff bake. Like that's a lot of the show. But there's something that is just so incredibly wholesome and like calming about it. There's no like sad backstory. You know, there's nobody that's on the show because they're mom passed away and they're five and their kids now have cancer. Yeah, like none of, whether or not that's true of any of the contestants, it is literally never spoken of.
So like not without the usual like reality show drama.
Like the whole, all of that stuff, all of that time that you'd be seeing in a United States competition show that would be about their backstory and their struggles and their trials and tribulations and the business they want to open, it focuses on
the
two hosts that are like cracking jokes. And like sometimes, so one of the hosts, Sue, like in multiple episodes has accidentally like put her elbow in a contestant's piece of like baked good and been like, oh shit, I'm so sorry. Like, Paul, it wasn't them. It was me. And like, they're just, they become friends with these contestants. You can see it and you can tell like when they have to eliminate somebody and they're saying like, it's with real sadness that we have to let this person go. Like it is actually with real sadness that they're letting them go because, you know, they just hang out and bake and it's just about people loving what they do. And you just get to see that and it's really cool. And it's, you know, there are kids that are like, you know, 17, 18, I think is the youngest contestant that's been on. And then there's like grandmas who have just been like baking their entire lives for their family that are just like, fuck it. Like I'm free on the weekends. I'll just like come down to this tent and bake in this competition show. And it's just incredibly, like it sounds boring, but it is just one of the best pieces of television. And so there's just so much beauty.
What do you know about television, Laura? You don't even watch TV.
This is the only television show I've ever watched. So that's the only thing I had to go off. No, and actually the reason that I'm watching it is because I watch Zumba's Just Desserts on Netflix, which is much more Americanized. It's not quite as dramatic as some of the other shows that are out there, but I was texting the group that I was like, guys, I'm like watching this shitty baking show on Netflix, like wasting my entire life. And all of you guys were like, why the fuck aren't you watching the Great British Baking Show? And I was like, what do you mean? So I finally watched it and I was like, oh my God, you're so right. So to come full circle, I watched the show because of you guys, and now I'm bringing it onto the show because it is just great.
let's move on to the discussion. So, you know, I'll ask you guys some questions, and you relate this shit to Kiki's delivery service.
Yeah, boy.
Let's.
That's how we do on the Common Geeking program.
Yeah. Yeah, usually. Probably.
Once in a while. Wonder feeling real, you know. Real
analytical.
Yeah. Real cooperative. Man, words are just not coming into my mind today. I don't know what it is.
That's okay. Have you seen any of the things that I typed to you guys while setting up for this recording? It's a fucking disaster.
All right.
What?
All right. Okay. Okay, Jeff.
Yeah, what's up?
So maybe this relates to your domain as well, Laura, but a commonality between Minecraft and Kiki's delivery service is routine.
I love that sentence.
Right? Things I never thought I'd hear.
Yeah. Strangest ways things of it. It's like back to episode one when, you know, we decided to rep things before we knew what the topic and theme were.
Oh, shit.
Anyway, so
I was just like, yeah, I'll relate Pokemon to Star Trek.
I mean, you Sorry, did a good continue. Job at it. Anyways, routine plays a big part in both Minecraft and Kiki's delivery service, and I get the feeling.
For sure.
The baking show as well, and I was thinking, what does Minecraft do with routine? What is it about, like, repetition that really creates this calmness?
Yeah, with Minecraft, like, the entire game is basically repetition, and there is, I think, part of the, I can't say this necessarily for Kiki's delivery service, but maybe I'll come back to that, but I think that part of the soothingness is, like, being able to kind of create patterns and also like find efficient ways to do things, which is basically all that Minecraft is that you find stuff to make doing things more efficient, and then you're making things more efficient so you could find more stuff and thus make things more efficient. So it's kind of this whole cyclical thing where you're not really trying to accomplish anything in particular unless you decide to. So it's kind of got this repetitive nature to it. Really, the reason that it relates in that way is that Minecraft kind of mimics day-to-day life in that sense, but not like our lives necessarily, like a simpler life. You know, like you go into Minecraft to fucking live on a farm and build your own house and fight off monsters in the middle of the night, you know, like things that we don't really have to live with anymore in common society, because like basically it's like all of these problems have been worked out for us. And I think that Kiki's delivery service kind of has a similar sort of appeal where it's like, oh, you're not just following Kiki on her day to day life, but her life is pretty simple. You know?
Yeah.
Well, so, like, she also starts being more efficient because she starts delivery service because a woman drops her baby's pacifier.
Right.
And the pregnant woman is going to run down all the way down the street and try to catch up with her. And Kiki's like, hey, I've got a broom. Like, let me do this. It's more efficient that way.
It's like moving away from sort of the hectic hustle and bustle.
Yeah.
Kind of lives we all live. Like, if you
just
kind of think about just kind of how stressful our day-to-day is, and not even for any particular reason. We don't have to worry about fucking predators and shit, and yet we always seem to be in a hurry to get there. And
Well, I think, like, going off of that, right, the repetition definitely is soothing, but I think more it's just that the repetition is indicative of a kind of, like, simpler sort of lifestyle.
Yeah.
So, like, in Kiki's delivery service and, like, Minecraft, you're kind of just, I think mostly the soothing aspect about it is that, like you said, you're not running from place to place. You can kind of take your time and meander with things, and basically everything is a lot less connected via, like, technology, which is kind of how we live our society today. Yeah. Which is not to say, like, oh, we should just go back to the good old days.
No.
Because it comes with its own kind of stress. But there's, like, a sort of soothing aspect of the simplicity of it. Like, it's sort of like, you know, like how people like to unplug from technology every once in a while. It's that sort of thing.
I think it's important to appreciate slowing down and just taking a minute. And, like, I think part of the repetition of the Great British Baking Show is, like, there are people's grandmothers in that tent that have made them that birthday cake 100 times for all of their families and their grandkids and their parents. And, like, they've made it so many times that it's just kind of what they are, because that's, like, a piece of their family and a piece of their lives. And, like, just being able to take a minute to appreciate that, I think, is really important.
You even see it in the movie with, like, the old lady who was making the herring and pumpkin pie.
And then her fucking snob-ass granddaughter is all like, ugh, grandma sent me another one of her crummy pies.
She was so rude.
Which is like sort of part of the movie, right? Is that like Kiki is kind of
envious of
She's envious of those lifestyle. I guess what I was going to say is that she's kind of old spirited compared to a lot of other people her age in the movie. Like except for like maybe Tombo, but like all the other like people that she meets for like a little bit her age are kind of snobby and they sort of take their lives for granted.
They're very teenager, like they're super classic American teenager.
Yeah. Whereas Kiki is very much like, oh, you know, just like, oh, I'll help you out because I feel like that's the right thing to do, you know? Like the old woman is like, oh, the pie's not done, so you can just take your money and go, sorry about that, right? Because our stove stopped working. And she's like, I'm not gonna take your money. If I'm gonna take your money, then I'm gonna help you figure out how to make this pie work, you know? And she's very much like less of this sort of, you know, more self-involved, newer philosophy that a lot of like younger people have. And is more just like, oh, help out when you can because people will pay you with favors and stuff like that. I don't know if I'm wording that correctly, but no, you know what I mean? She's definitely like, she's more in tune with the older people in the movie than the people her own age.
Well, and I think all of the things that we're talking about right now are very wholesome, right? Like
when you think
of wholesome, like, you know, building your own house from the ground up and like digging out the materials and mining for them. Like it's a very wholesome idea.
And defending it from explosive green monsters.
And so is Kiki wanting to help out and like just be kind of a better witch and a better person. And then God, everyone should just watch the Great British Baking Show. Like it is, it is the most wholesome thing on television and it is fantastic.
Speaking of like stuff like building a house from the ground up or whatever, a common running thread in a lot of Ghibli films, Kiki included, but also in stuff like Whispers of the Heart, is craftsmanship. You know, you have the bakers that Kiki lives with, you have Tombo and his love for aviation, you have the artist girl that Kiki befriends, and like...
Ursula?
Yeah.
Ursula, that's her name, yes.
Yeah.
You know, there's a fondness for artistry that Miyazaki has, and, you know, makes sense. He is an artist, and he likes artistry, and like a certain kind of artistry he finds important is like observing the world or observing others, and just like and so I guess my the question I'm trying to lead into is like, how does craftsmanship play a part in like the mundanity of your domains? How is crafting
Well, I think I've got some pretty obvious things to go off of there, but Laura, you can go first.
No, I mean, Sam, I think that that's what's so great about watching the Great British Baking Show is that, yeah, it's people that are obviously incredibly talented or they wouldn't be there. But it's also, you watch these people being like totally real people. Like there's a kid who's in high school who has to take her exams in the first season. There's a guy who like just had a baby and is like a draftsman. So he like does architecture, I guess. And like, they're just these people and they all have, every time they're making something, they're like, oh man, I really don't know if this is right. I don't know what's happening. Like, I think it's supposed to be this, but I'm not 100% sure. And you can see them really like questioning, you know, it's not rote for them. And it's not, even if they've done it 100 times, like it's still not something that they're like, oh, I totally got this in the bag. Like, it's just such a human response. You can see it and see how much they care about what they're crafting because they put these amazing ideas onto paper and they think of these incredible baked goods to make. And then you see them like literally crouching over their ovens. And there are people in the later seasons that laugh at the, like they're being filmed and they're laughing saying like, I said I wasn't going to do this because it looks so silly. And yet there they are like staring into the oven because they're like, I want to get it just right. And I want to make sure that it doesn't burn on the top, but it has to be fully cooked. And you can just see the passion that they have for this, this craft of making food. And it's just, you can just see how much they care.
Yeah, and I think that's actually a pretty important aspect of it, is that you mentioned earlier is that something about the Great British Baking Show is that they don't have like this big, oh, you're doing this for the prize money or whatever, right?
Yeah, they're doing it because they love it.
Yeah, exactly. Is that like a lot of these things with the artistry, especially that like Hayao Miyazaki portrays characters having in a lot of his films, is that people are very, they're very internally motivated as compared to like doing things for a living or, you know, doing things for some objective, right? You know, like Ursula.
Yeah, it's not about a reward. It's about intrinsic value. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Ursula, the artist character, is a good example, right? Because, like, she's completely removed herself from society. She lives out in a cabin in the woods, right? And you don't really hear anything about, like, how, like, what she does with her work, like, if she sells them or whatever. Like, that it doesn't even get brought up or asked, you know?
Right.
It's just like, oh, yeah, I wanted to know I was going to paint since I was very young, and I did it. And
now here I am in the middle of the woods. Surrounded by birds.
I have crow friends. It's great.
I relate to that a lot, right? Because, like, being a studio arts major in college, right? Like, you know, I said to people all the time, like, yeah, I mean, if you're taking studio arts courses in college, if your goal is to get A's, like, it's not a difficult thing to accomplish. But that doesn't mean that the work is, like, easier. You know what I mean? The thing with me and a lot of the other studio majors is that we had this extra motivation of we wanted it to be good for the sake of it being good, even though we all knew, for the most part, that past a certain point, we had reached a level, you know?
Right.
We had reached, like, the minimum cutoff for how well we had to do on this piece, and we could, if we wanted to, you know, put it down and devote times on other things that we had to do in our lives, but it's like, no, you have to spend the time on the piece because you want it to be the best it can be, you know? It's not about the extrinsic motivation of the grade, it's about the intrinsic motivation, like Chatter said, of completing something and making it the way you want it to. And, like, bringing that back to Minecraft, right, that's pretty much the whole game, right?
Yeah.
Is that you do kind of make stuff to make your life easier, but the only things that you're doing in your life to make easier are building things and creating things. And even if you're just building, like, machines to make your, you know, in-game life more efficient, you're still doing it just for the sake of.
Yeah, but more often than not, you're just making things because you can in Minecraft, you know? Like, I know in one of my worlds, I basically, like, created, like, these houses that are, like, built on trees and connected by bridges, and it's more work, but I just wanted to do it because it seemed like it'd be enjoyable. I don't know, it gets me thinking about my own experiences with art, and, Because I'm an animator, but, you know, I often fall into the trap of, like, worrying too much about finished products. And, you know, I'm worried about, trying to get a job, trying to get an internship.
Yeah.
I'm worried about, what if this just isn't any good? And I get caught up in all these small things that I leave so many things unfinished. And it's hard for me to turn that off, and I wish I could.
Yeah.
So that I could make something. Enjoy the process of making.
I think that's very human, though. Like,
yeah, definitely.
There are so many things to worry about, but that's, you know, if you can get to a place where, yeah, hey, maybe do some animating while watching Great British Baking Show and just enjoy the creation, man.
Laura's really trying to sell this show.
It's really good. I think there's something that I was there, like, okay, so I've talked about how I went to Green Meadow for a little while, so I didn't have, like, the TV and the movies and everything. So a lot of what I did and spent my time with was creating things, whether it was art or my own imaginary world or whatever it was. And then, obviously, I grew up, I got a TV, I started working, and I kind of entered this adult world where social media and TV is everywhere. And I wasn't creating anything for a while, for like several years. And there was just some huge part of me that was missing. And I didn't realize it until I just, like, I think I picked back up with creation by, like, doing a cross stitch. Like, that was the first thing that I picked up for doing in a long time. And all of a sudden, it was just like, oh, God, I forgot that this was, like, this is, it's so important to be able to make things with your own hands and, like, get the value of saying, like, look at this thing that I created. You know, who cares if it's great or if it's bad or if you love it or hate it or why you did it? Like, I think it's so important to take joy in creation.
Yeah, for sure. And, like, going back a little bit to what Chatter was saying, something that he said reminded me of a line from the movie itself was that, like, Chatter, you were talking about how even if you're actively creating things, but you're trying to, you know, use it as sort of a career option, you know, it gets to this point in life where it starts to feel like it's more work than, you know, entertainment. And, like, there's a line in the movie, right, where Kiki is saying, like, oh, yeah, I used to love flying until I started doing it for a living, right?
Yeah.
And, but, like, the way that I wanted to connect to Beck is, like, I think that that's something that is still kind of escapist about the movie, right? Is that you can go back and see these worlds where people are just doing things for the sake of, and kind of like live vicariously through them, because like nowadays when everything is more complicated and you're, you know, everyone's schedules are all busy and stuff and everyone's running back and forth, even if you're doing the things you love, sometimes it's out of necessity as well.
At the end of the day, the fact of the matter is we got bills to pay. And
So sometimes it is nice to jump into a movie where people can do things and then like learn how to appreciate them just for the fact that they're doing it. Not that we can't too, but like in a more pure sort of form, I guess. And then like on a meta level, that kind of extends to the movie as well, because like you were saying earlier, like Ghibli movies have such an attention to detail, which is ultimately like not always necessary, but you can tell it's put in there because it's like the animators really loving their craft, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And like if you know like the kind of hours like people at Studio Ghibli put into that stuff, They gotta love that shit. They gotta love that shit. They would all go insane if they didn't. For sure, they are going insane, but
yeah, man, animation. God, like when I was a little kid, I used to want to be like an animator or a cartoonist or something. And like then just like going forward, I'm like, I don't have the temperament.
I mean, I don't think I have the temperament, but here I am chugging along. Before we move on to the rating, let's just answer some viewer questions. Listener questions. This is a podcast, yes.
Listener, yeah, viewer. No one views this podcast. We put those up every Monday for a future topic, and I think the last episode also had some, but this is one of the first episodes that we actually got some responses to these. So, yeah, we got 3 questions from a person named Monica Ho, who I do not know at all. I definitely didn't go to middle school with her. Not in the slightest. She's a totally random person out there in the world who follows us just because she likes our podcast, not because she knows half of us.
Nice. That's the kind of listener we really want.
Her first question is, do you think Hayao Miyazaki will ever really retire?
No.
Okay, Monica, I'm gonna have to be realistic with you. Someday, Miyazaki will die.
Yeah.
And then 3 years later, he will rise from the grave to announce that he's been working on a new fucking movie with Ghibli. Like, that man like, will never retire, all right? That is the most realistic answer I can give you, Monica.
The first time that they announced that Miyazaki was retiring, I was like, oh, no. And then the next time, they're like, oh, he's going to retire. And I'm just like, didn't he already retire? But then didn't he also put out a movie after that? Now isn't he doing another? If they ever tell me he's retiring again, I just won't believe them.
I didn't believe them when the last time he said he retired. He's back now. He's making stuff. Okay. Next question. Like that one's the most open and shut one.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, definitely.
So why do you think his protagonists are all so young usually? Is it cultural or something else? Man, you can write a book on that one. I'm gonna try to keep it short. On the cultural level, Japan has a fascination with cute, with adorable, and much smarter people have written about it than I do.
So, kawaii. I took a class on it.
On the personal level, Miyazaki ultimately makes stories about kids growing up in a complicated, harsh world. And like the feeling he often capitalizes on is sort of like being small and like looking up into the sky and seeing something vast. And it works best when your protagonists are children, when they very much are small and like are carried on by forces much bigger than them.
I think we've also talked about this on several episodes, at least, where there's this wonderful bridge between childhood and adulthood and entertainment in animation, where it can really appeal to so many people, because when you're growing up, you can see what's possible. And then when you're older, you can look back and remember how you felt and remember trying to feel that, you know, anticipation of growing up and how hard it can be and how wonderful and freeing it is. So I think it really spans a lot of ages.
Do you remember episode 21? What a good time.
Yeah.
Good times. Good time. All right.
You're so
nostalgic.
Yeah. And to top it all off, Hayao Miyazaki is a feminist. And the fact that his protagonists are often young girls is him like giving young girls someone to look to, someone to go, hey, someone experiences the things I experience.
Media representation, as someone call it.
Yeah.
True.
All right. And the third question. And what do you think of other famous directors like Makoto Shinkai and Mamoru Hosoda? How do their works compare and contrast? Okay. Another one you could write a fucking book on.
Yeah. So the first guy is the one who directed Your Name, right? The Correct. Really famous one.
Yeah.
So I don't think I've actually seen anything by him. And I looked at the other guy's filmography, and the only thing that I recognized was that he directed the Digimon anime for a little while.
Yeah, but that's not really.
I don't think that's what. Yeah.
No.
I don't have a good answer for that. But I mean, like, I've seen other movies by other like Japanese directors, and like, I feel like most of the films that I've seen that aren't Ghibli don't really capture the same kind of spirit for me,
well,
personally. But
yeah, well,
but I haven't seen Your Name. I've heard that's really good.
Yeah, I can actually speak for Shinkai and Hosoda. I've seen their movies.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so they also have a reverence for sort of the ordinary that Miyazaki has, very much influenced by Miyazaki. You know, Hosoda made Wolf Children, which is basically about this mother trying to raise her children who also happen to be
wolves.
Happen to be able to turn into wolves.
Just and, one of those things, you
just,
know?
Just oh, one shit. Of those things.
So mundane.
And Shinkai, his most famous movie, Your Name, is about a boy and a girl switching bodies, Freaky Friday style. But, like, the interesting thing is, like, he takes the time to, like, kind of observe, like, what would it be like to...
Yeah, to really think about the like, philosophical implications of that, rather than just, like, the gimmicky stuff, yeah.
Yeah, to be in another person's shoes. And yeah, so they... So how they compare, they all have that reverence for the mundane. They all, like, want to observe life and bring out that beauty of life through their art.
Take the slow road.
How they contrast, that is a... That's a tricky one, because... But I would say that Miyazaki has a very fuck capitalist bent to his work.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. And whereas...
it's like not as obvious in this one, but...
Yeah, yeah, but it's very obvious in something like Howl's Moving Castle.
Yeah,
you know, in the war scenes and stuff. But whereas Hosoda and...
And Princess Mononoke.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas Hosoda and Shinkai aren't particularly concerned with that. You'll often see like characters engage with technology, which is not something that happens in Miyazaki. You know, like I am almost certain there at some point there was an animator who was like, you know, in this setting, a character would probably have a smartphone. Proceeds to start drawing it. Miyazaki bursts through the door. No! Slaps the pen out of their hand. No smartphones!
Yeah, no, I think that's something about Miyazaki's, like, films in particular, is that they definitely are very unplugged compared to a lot of other animations and a lot of other just things in general. Like, even Western stuff from old time periods doesn't really have that same feeling to it, even if the technology isn't actually present, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I mean, that's just dipping your toe into these questions. These are big, and we could talk all day about it, but unfortunately, we don't have all day. So let's move on to the ratings.
Thank you for those questions, Monica.
And welcome to the ratings.
Oh my god. Is it the ratings? Is it the ratings already? Have we made it? We made it here, guys. We've come so far.
I even got a chance to say some words. It's great.
We did it. All right.
So first we'll just rate Kiki's delivery service. And you guys are going to be rating it out of 5. I mean, since the episode's about being the mundane, let's just make it mundane. Loaves of bread.
Nice.
I really thought you were about to say out of 5 mundanities.
Okay. Jeff?
All right, so Kiki's Delivery Service, I'm going to give a solid, I guess 4 out of 5 loaves of bread. I think in terms of Miyazaki movies, it's probably one of my, like, it's probably one of the ones that I like less. But that being said, you know, least liked of Miyazaki movies is, like, not a very, It's a misleading scale because I think that they're all great.
Even at its worst, it's brilliant. So
yeah, like even my least favorite one, Spirited Away, which I think is overrated, I still think is a great fucking movie. Like, I just don't think that it deserves to be.
You like Spirited Away less than like The Wind Rises? Because I feel like his weakest film might be. Yeah, The Wind Rises.
I watched The Wind Rises when I was with a big group of people, and they wouldn't shut up the whole time, so I kind of had a skewed, like, perception of it from that, and I want to watch it again, like, to see it as itself. So I don't really have a good opinion of The Wind Rises, not, like, a positive, like, I don't have a solid opinion of The Wind Rises. Whispers of the Heart, sometimes, I gotta be in the mood for it, but also that one's a little bit lower down on there. Anyway, I'm not fucking.
I was about to say this has become Jeff's rating of all of Miyazaki movies.
I'm gonna go through every single Studio Ghibli film. The top one is definitely The Cat Returns.
All right, I'm gonna go ahead.
4 out of 5. 4 out of 5 loaves of bread for Kiki's Delivery Service. It's a beautiful movie. Not my favorite Ghibli movie, but it's just I really do appreciate all the attention to detail and all the. You know, the mundane aspects of it. Sorry. Mm. Go ahead, Laura.
I will also rate it a 4 out of 5. For some reason, when you were originally coming up with the scale, I was thinking breadsticks. So when you said loaves of bread, I now can't get breadsticks out of my head. So I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 breadsticks. Yeah, I mean, it's only the second Miyazaki film I've seen or Studio Ghibli film I've seen. I have fonder memories of My Neighbor Totoro, but... I saw it in a very different experience. Like, I watched Kiki's Delivery Service over a couple of lunch breaks, watching it on my phone in a break room with a bunch of people. So, like, the experience itself was not as good as it could have been. But I did really like how it was just very soothing, which made perfect sense for the topic. And even the moments when I was expecting it to, like, get really crazy and it didn't, it was almost like it gave me that opportunity to take a deep breath and just, like, relax my shoulders, remember that, like, breathing is a normal thing to do, and, like, you don't have to get stressed over everything. So I really enjoyed it, and I am definitely going to watch more Studio Ghibli films in the near future. So 4 out of 5.
All right, and now I will determine who best contributed to the discussion. And
job. This is a good discussion.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Stalling so that I can think of what I want to say. It's you're gonna get a star, but it ain't gonna be gold. Because this is mundane. It's regular. So you're going to get.
None of the stars have been stars, and all of them have been gold, though. I'm so confused.
Hold up.
They're all on stars.
Anyways, you are going to be getting the regular broom. It ain't golden. It's just a regular broom. It's just a regular ass broom. You can
regular
sweep with
ass
it.
Ass broom.
Is it the one that she rides at the very end, which is like the street sweeper's broom? It's not even her magical flying broom.
Yo, fuck that guy. He's like, I'm not gonna give you my broom. And then after she saves the day, he's like, that was my broom.
Wait, what? Again, that might be a difference between sub and dub. In the sub, he was yeah, sure. Don't worry, I'll bring it back. Okay, cool. That was the screen.
Oh, really?
But yeah, the winner will be getting a regular broom. No gold.
Broom. On a star. It will be on a star.
Anyways, you both did a great job talking about this and talking about a pretty strange topic when I think about it. But I think I'm going to have to go with Jeff on this one. Jeff, woo! You win the broom!
Yeah, I love brooms. I guess. No, thank you. I'm happy to have a broom, especially if it means I can fly.
Oh, no, you can't fly. It's a regular ass broom.
Oh, okay.
You would only be able to fly it if you were the witch.
I'll enjoy methodically?
I was about to say methamphetamines?
That's the mundane
syllable. Is there another syllable in that word? Methodically? Is that the correct way to say that word?
Yes.
Yes, I'll enjoy methodically sweeping with it and taking my sweet time to smell the roses and enjoying the mundanity of sweeping a floor with a regular ass broom.
Is mundanity actually a word? We've said it a couple
it
times.
It is now. Fucking now.
Okay, just
yeah, no, you both did a great job just talking about like how this effect is achieved, how your topics like create something sort of meaningful in the ordinary, and at the end of the day, Jeff just kind of barely inched you out there, Laura.
He was able to relate it specifically to the movie more frequently. I will give him that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, thanks. I was really doing this for Laura's validation.
Well, you have it, so.
Yeah, I that means that I've joined Laura, Pat, Eddie, and Colin in tied for first place.
That's too fucking many of us in first place.
I know, it's amazing.
It would seem that first place has now become.
Oh fuck!
Monday.
I would have been in first. I would have been in first. First.
Oh. You would have been in first. First. Yeah.
Brutal. All right. My life is supposed to be mundane, I suppose. I'll just be first with everyone else.
All right.
When everyone's special, no one will be. You guys excited for The Incredibles 2? I am.
Hell to the fuck.
I am,
yeah.
Actually, yeah.
Sorry, all right. I'll let you do the outro.
Let's get to the outro. So that about wraps it up. Thanks for listening to our program. I'm your host, Taimul, or Chowder, whichever you prefer. You can find me at Twitter at Taimul Chowdhury. Simple as that. But look it up, I suppose. Again, I've been joined by...
Hi, my name is Jeff. Fuck, I said I wasn't going to do this, but I'm going to do it. I have a website. It has got a really long URL. It's jeffreylevitt13.wixsite.com/thingsiwishexisted. Yeah, it's my website with the arts and stuff. I don't have any relevant Twitters or Facebooks. I mean, I have a Facebook, but I don't really do anything on there at all. So that's my deal.
And I am Laura. I also don't really do a whole lot on the social medias, so you could probably find me if you looked for me on Facebook, but I really don't do anything on there. It's not that exciting. Sometimes I post a picture of my guinea pig, and that's about it.
All right.
Hey, Chowder, who won episode 53?
Oh, yeah, Colin won.
Yep. Oh, I lied. Colin's is definitively in first place. I've lied to you all.
Chowder, I could have been in first kind of place. Second first place.
You know, knowing that Colin's in first place, I probably would have just given it to you so that he doesn't get that satisfaction. Should have told me earlier.
Right. Someone will dethrone him again.
Sure. All right. Who's the next host right now?
Me.
Laura. All right. It's Laura.
So tune in next episode where Laura will discuss what's that thing called?
We're gonna be talking about Galaxy Quest. It is a fucking fantastic movie. Suffice it to say, it is my favorite movie of all time. Consistently. And we're going to be talking about fandom, and it's going to be super fun. So I actually did a terrible job as host, and I did not look to see where you could watch Galaxy Quest. I think it was up on Netflix at a certain point, but I don't know if it's still there. Check Netflix. It's a super great movie, really fun, and I think fandom is something that we can all get behind. So check it out, and we'll be talking about it next week.
If
you have any questions, it's going to be too late to ask them. Just kidding. Bye.
All right. So be sure to listen to that next Friday on March.
That episode airs on March 23rd.
You heard it, folks. It will appear on March 20. What did you
third,
say? Second? Third.
23rd. Yeah. 23rd. March 23rd. We got that on the first take.
Yes, don't smoke guns. God damn, we're the worst. All right. In the meantime, feel free to follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Geeking Program. Any engagement, such as sharing a post, tagging us, or tweeting hashtag CGP, will enter you into a raffle where you get to pick the topic for a future episode. You can also review us on Apple Podcasts, which is a critical way for new people to find the show. And we read all new reviews on the air. Whatever you do, thank you for your support. Thank you for listening.
Did we get any? Wait, should
I'm
we read any?
Did
I'm
we?
Checking.
Wait, did we?
Laura's on the job. Nope.
Oh.
We checked that beforehand.
I need validation.
First take.
Man, this episode's gonna sound great in post, hopefully.
It's okay. We're capturing the mundanity of conversation.
Yeah, yeah, if we're real, we'll just keep it super mundane and not edit the episode and just put it out as is.
Oh, God, no.
And then people will think this is indicative of our normal recordings, which it's just not. We're all over the place right now.
Yeah, so whatever you do, thank you for your support. Thank you for listening. We will talk to you next week.
This episode of the Common Geeking Program was hosted by Timul Chaudhary, joined by Jeff Levitt and Laura Kramer. This episode is sponsored by PDFs. Almost anything can play it, so why aren't you people using it? The podcast is created and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levitt, with this episode edited by me, Timul Chaudhary, and featuring original music by Colin Ketchin. If you like the show, follow us, tell your friends, or leave us a review. Next Friday, we'll be talking about Galaxy Quest and fandom, so read up on that. And thank you for listening to this podcast. Ciao.
Okay, that sounded good enough.
I felt like I was a little early, but...
It lagged a little bit for you, so when you said 5 seconds, there were like 3 seconds left, so I was kind of concerned, but it turned out okay.
We're syncing up our audio.
Oh, snap.
Hi, Charles.
Jeff says hi.
Hi, Jeff.
Hello.
I
Charles
heard him.
Hi. Who?
Chowder.
Chowder.
Time Wall.
Chowder. Hi, Chowder. Is it that
Charles? He says hi. I think he doesn't understand. He's confused about nickname.
No, he was talking about the show Chowder, right?
He just imagined.
Is that
like
a show?
Yeah, it's a.
You never seen Chowder?
For
oh right, you don't have TV.
I have never seen TV in my entire life.